From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Well, we're moving on up. Welcome to affiliate WHJJ AM 920 in Providence, Rhode Island, the talk of Rhode Island. Good to be with you, and welcome to the family. Next hour, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself with Dr. Joe Dispenza. Looking forward to that. Hey, here's an exciting story. You can see a picture of this planet at coasttocoastam.com under our highlight reel. Astronomers have confirmed the existence of a new class of planet never before seen before, a water world with a thick, steamy atmosphere. The exoplanet is a so-called super-Earth, bigger than our planet, but much smaller than the gas giants such as Jupiter. Observations using the Hubble telescope now seem to confirm that a large fraction of its mass is water. And you know what? They're suggesting it might have exotic materials there. I wonder what that means. How far away is it? Well, too far for us to go right now, but it's out there. Iran is warning that it would strike against any enemy threatening it if it needed to protect its national interest, even if the enemy did not attack first. Still, the beating drums of war continue. Jerome Corsi on the line with us here, writes for WorldNet Daily. Jerry, I've got to tell you, you and I have gut instincts when it comes to these things. This is getting tense.
Yeah, every day, George, seems to be a new incendiary kind of comment or development in the Iran-Israeli showdown. And this latest statement from Iran today, the head of the Iranian armed forces saying that missile attacks from Hezbollah in Lebanon or Hamas in the Gaza against Israel could be launched at any time, could very well be the way a shooting war starts. And today we've also had, or yesterday, this arrest of an Iranian terrorist in Thailand who had these radio bombs and was planning to attack Israeli diplomatic officials with these radio bombs, blew himself up, but this, in the process, you know, the police in Thailand discovered his arsenal of weapons. And again, I believe, George, we're already in the covert war, the secret war between Iran and Israel. I think it's already started.
I think you're right, Jerry. I do. But in this particular case, you know, if Iran, for example, fires on a U.S. warship or an Israeli boat or something, it's all going to break loose.
It's only going to take, at this point, George, one incident of any kind, any shooting incident between Iran and Israel, or between Iran through its surrogates, Hezbollah in Lebanon or Hamas in the Gaza, rocket attacks into Israel, some incident involving a U.S. ship. It could be anything at this point. Even some kind of a black flag operation would trigger a war starting. I mean, it's a very... it's a tinderbox at this point in the Middle East, and any day I expect to wake up and find the shooting war has started between Israel and Iran.
Yesterday, I had a chance to interview Hossein Hejazi. He lives in Beverly Hills, but he's been a radio broadcaster for Iranian radio in this country, Jerry. He says most people in Iran want these mullahs out, but they don't really want war necessarily. So what do we do?
Well, George, this has been saying this for years, and the broadcasters from California into Iran, the Iranians, have been asking for the U.S. to support the freedom movement, the green movement within Iran. We missed an historic opportunity in June 2009 when Mousavi lost the election, fraudulently lost the election against Ahmadinejad, who was reelected as president. There were protesters in the streets of Tehran. All President Obama, I think, had to do was to support those protesters, and we could have seen peaceful change from within Iran, which is the only and best solution. A war is going to be tragic. I've been trying to prevent it since I wrote Atomic Iran in 2005, and I fear, George, despite those efforts to prevent a war, it's coming.
And what are we going to do about Syria, where they continue to bomb and kill innocent people? I saw a video of a little 2-year-old child today in Syria killed from shrapnel. At what point do people step in and say enough is enough there?
Well, we should. That's a tragic situation, again, of Syria killing its own people. It's also very complicated. I just saw at the UN, a group of Christians were applauding China and Iran blocking any action in Syria because of the Muslim Brotherhood taking over so much of the opposition in Syria. There's concern now in Egypt and across the Middle East there could be a pogrom or a set of riots against Christians in countries like Egypt, which are being taken over by the Muslim Brotherhood. Increasingly, Egypt is not safe for Christians or Americans to visit. And Syria, depending on how Syria goes, I mean, I think it'd be foolish for anybody to think of going to Syria. Syria is just a complete disaster right now. And with the military killing Syrian civilians, it's a disaster that has no immediate end to it.
Well, Jerry, in the 1920s, my family left those regions because of the same thing.
You
know, they were Christians and they were being slaughtered. They left behind their homes, their businesses, and everything, came to this country. They wanted a better life, but they wanted to get here with their necks.
Precisely. And George, it's been a tragedy that the mainstream media has not reported the increasing radicalization of the Middle East since this Arab Spring. The Egyptian Brotherhood taking over countries like Egypt is a very, very dangerous sign for a more radical form of Islam taking over northern Africa and the Middle East. And we could see those same circumstances, George, that forced your family to leave the Middle East, again forcing millions of Christians to flee the Middle East to avoid being killed.
All right, Jerry, thank you so much. Jerry Corsi. Residents across 13 states reported feeling a 4.0 magnitude earthquake that struck southeastern Missouri early Tuesday, 3:55 a.m. Central Time. It was centered 9 miles east-southeast of Sikeston, Missouri. No major damage there reported, but lots of states rumbled down there. Michigan. State lawmakers there are currently reviewing legislation that targets the use of certain toy guns. A planned proposal before the Senate would make it a crime to possess a toy gun that has had its required markings removed or by having a real gun that is made up to look like a toy. Apparently, gang members are running around with toy guns now, threatening people and robbing them. In Chicago, a 16-year-old boy fell to his death through a garbage chute in a high-rise building. The teenager apparently was doing chores, throwing out trash, when he plunged into the chute and fell 46 stories through the building's trash chute. The building is 48 stories tall, and he was dead. University of California, San Diego researchers have developed a new injectable hydrogel that could be effective, they say, in safe treatment for tissue damage caused by heart attacks. 785,000 new heart attack cases in the U.S. each year, with no established treatment yet for repairing the resulting damage to cardiac tissue, except, of course, we know stem cells work, but this is very close to that. And it's a freeze-dried, milled into powder form, then liquefied parts of heart muscles that they then inject into the hearts. Scientists say they have found a new weapon against pancreatic cancer after promising new early trials of an experimental drug there, so they are now testing that. And federal regulators said that they've approved new supplies for two crucial cancer drugs, easing critical shortages, at least for the time being. The FDA said it will temporarily allow importation of a replacement drug for Doxil, a drug for ovarian and other cancers that hasn't been available for new patients for months. Dr. Leonard Coldwell, of course, a leading authority on cancer. How could they run short on this stuff, Leonard?
You know, George, it is absolutely impossible that they really can run short on something like that, except there is a big master plan behind all of this. And it is just really creating artificial panic to force the FDA to approve new cancer drugs faster and to make it possible to make even more profits so that the consumer or the patient accept higher prices. It is just really an illusion, and it's really a big hoax. What the pharmaceutical industry tries here is to make people believe that cancer drugs really work. Cancer drugs treat and cure cancer, which is absolutely wrong. It is absolutely not true. No cancer drug, chemical cancer drug, ever cured any cancer. They are just treating the symptoms and they're poisoning the patient. And people need to understand that there is no such thing as a cancer-curing chemical that is produced by the pharmaceutical industry, but there are 400 known natural cancer cures out there that cure cancer with nearly no side effects and very often nearly with 100% effectiveness.
Dr. Colwell's website is part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com, and you have a special email for listeners who might want some free health answers. Can you give that out for us, Leonard?
It's instinctbasedmedicine@gmail.com, instinctbasedmedicine@gmail.com, and on worldhealthnation.com are all my free historical cancer cures and cures for any kind of disease.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Dr. Leonard Colwell. Researchers have unearthed a forest in northern China preserved under a layer of ash deposited 300 million years ago. They call it just like the Italian city of Pompeii. These are well-preserved forest trees, 300 million years old. And solar activity, of course, as we know, can wreak havoc in communication systems, particularly during coronal mass ejections when plumes of electrically charged particles hit Earth's atmosphere. Some say now scientists can track the plumes down to the single affected city, helping to predict disruptions in where it might be. But what happens when the big one hits us? Matt Stein joins us in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie, noted author. When technology fails, Matt Stein is an engineer, author, building contractor, owner of Aloha Aina Builders. And Matt built hurricane-resistant, energy-efficient, and environmentally friendly homes in Hawaii. We've got a studio there. Matt, we've got a studio on the Big Island out there, by the way, that I got to start going to. How are you?
I'm doing terrific. Thanks for having me back on your show tonight. Well,
likewise. My pleasure, too. I think you're right. I think it's just a matter of time when we're going to get hit by some kind of solar flare and all heck is going to break loose.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, these things happen on a fairly... They're not like clockwork. You can't say exactly when the next extreme event happened, but the about 100 significant solar storms in the last 150 years, the last extreme solar storm happened in 1921, the great geomagnetic storm in 1921, lit up the skies incredibly over 90% of the planet for two full nights. And 60 years before that, to do the math, there was the Carrington event, 1859, lit it up for a full week every night. Sky lit up blood red, orange, green streaks. I mean, incredible from the North Pole south to Hawaii and Haiti, and from the South Pole north to Samoa. So just a narrow strip of deep tropical zone in the planet that didn't see those incredible northern lights. And, you know, back then when it happened, it's kind of like an incredible light show and a few telegraph stations burned down, and in 1921, Penn Central Station burned down from induced power. But, you know, there was no widespread grid. There were no nuclear power plants. There was no microelectronics. There was no internet. So, you know, if the power went out for here and there and telegraphs went down, it's kind of big deal. No big deal. Life went on as normal.
Nowadays, everything would be shut down, man.
Nowadays, you're talking about frying the grid over most of the industrial world, except for perhaps the deep tropical zones, once they got disconnected from the other parts of the grid. Because, you know, we had killer trees in 2003 that took down the Great Northeast Blackout. They thought first it was terrorists, but not, turned out it was killer trees. Some power lines shorted on some trees and took out power to 50 million people. Now, we're talking an extreme solar event that would fry these huge power transformers that are millions, tens of millions of dollars each. They're custom made. There's a 3-year waiting line to buy a single one.
There are no backups, right?
Well, I got like two.
Two.
And, you know, I mean, these things are tens of millions of dollars each.
And you can't install them in a day, right?
No. It takes a team of guys, and they got to shut down the freeway, and it's 20 feet tall, and, you know, they get a giant truck. And I mean, it's a massive thing to move one of these things around. So, you know, in North America, they have maybe two or three. I mean, back in 1989, they had a storm that wiped out one, geomagnetic storm, wiped out one in Quebec, shut down power to 9 million people for, you know, half a day. And it wiped out one in New Jersey, I think, and one in the UK. But, you know, these three, two in North America almost caused a major grid failure. I mean, it did cause a major one, but it didn't cause a cascading failure that went all the way down the East Coast. So that's just two. This storm in 1921, the scientific modeling study done under the auspices of the Oak Ridge National Lab,
mm-hmm.
and checked by Sandia National Lab, so these are, you know, big gun scientific minds, estimate 365 of these giant transformers in the U.S. alone cooked, perhaps 2,000 or more in the world. That's like a 20-year manufacturing.
That is crazy. How many of those transformers are in the United States?
I think there's something like 1,200.
1,200 of them.
So this is like
so for 1,200
one
of them.
Three would get cooked. And the further north you go, the higher the percentage. You're talking like 50, 60% of them in the northern states, and you're talking only 10 or 15% of them frying when you're down in places like Texas. But, you know, killer trees, no transformers, no nothing, took out power to 50 million people. So you're talking a situation where most of the grid to the dense metro areas in this country would be down for months to years. And parts of the area, the more rural areas, the areas with more hydropower, might be able to eventually get disconnected from the other people and restart their grid. But when everything's down, it's extremely tough to restart the grid. It's like they want to have someplace up and running to restart from. And so if the whole grid in the entire country collapsed, which it probably would at least short term, very difficult to get anything else going. But the kicker is that when the grid's down, whenever the grid goes down, when there's a nuclear power plant, the power plant automatically goes into emergency shutdown.
That's right. That's a good point.
It disconnects from the grid, and it says, okay, I got to shut down because, you know, something's wrong with the
right.
grid.
I'm by myself. I'm going to melt down. I got to do this, right?
And so when it does that, it's not like flipping a switch, you know, and the lights go out. It's like the power in the reactor core drops down to 5%. Well, 5% of like a 50-megawatt reactor, that's a huge amount of heat still pouring out in that core. So you got to keep it cooled. In fact, you have to keep those rods cooled for 3 to 5 years after you start shutting down. And so when you start shutting it down, those backup battery banks and backup power generators kick in, and they keep the pumps going, and they keep the water flowing. Now, according to the Japanese authorities, it wasn't the earthquake that directly caused the Fukushima disaster. The earthquake knocked out the grid. The reactor went into emergency shutdown. The backups kicked in and kept the water flowing. But then the tsunami came along and wiped out the backups.
That's right.
Then all hell broke loose a few hours later when those cores overheated and melted down and started dissociating the water into hydrogen and oxygen. And they started recombining and explosions and blowing the containment vessel. And, you know, it was a total disaster. Now, problem now is, you get 350 of these power transformers in North America going down, and most 37%, more than one out of three of every American lives within 50 miles of a nuclear reactor. See, these reactors are built not in the metro areas, but near, because it costs a lot of money, and you lose power efficiency to transport energy like that long distances. So, you know, they're 10, 20, 30 miles out of town. So all of a sudden, where the dense areas are, which is where the grid's going to really collapse, is where the nuclear power plants are. Now, the Regulatory Commission says they mandate you store a week's worth of fuel on hand because, you know, normally the grid is quite stable in America. It's not going to be down for longer than the grid, right? Well, you have 350 of these transformers go down. That's like several years of the world's production of these transformers to replace them.
And they're fried when they go down, right?
Oh, yeah, I mean, they're gone. They're cooked. They're over. In fact, we stopped making them in America because we started these extra high voltage transformers in like the late 60s, early 70s to upgrade the grid. And our program to do that went from then till the mid 90s. And then we kind of basically were done. So they stopped making them because we just weren't building them in America. We didn't need them. We did it.
We make them in China now, don't we?
Yeah, they're in China and India, you know, different parts of the world. So,
jeez.
So now, you know, the people who knew how to make these things, they're like dead or retired or gone.
They're gone.
And it's a super craft. I mean, they built a plant in Brazil a year ago to make these things. And in their first year of production, they had 50% failures within a year of all of the ones they made. So these are like really tough. It's a science and art to make them. It's not like you go down to your local hardware store and you know, you buy a transformer. No, these things are, you know, 300 tons each and 25 feet tall and tens of millions of dollars and custom made and designed for each and every installation.
Matt, when we come back, I want to ask you if an X-flare, you know, we just dodged one, if an X-flare will fry these transformers. Well, with Matt Stein, his book, When Technology Fails, I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we had our video chat tonight for Coast Insiders, had a lot of fun doing that. It is incredible technology. Next hour, Dr. Joe Dispenza joins me. We'll talk about mind power, an incredible story. He's written a book called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. And Matt Stein's with us. We're going to take calls and continue talking about what happens when the grid goes down. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Matt Stein, his other book, When Disaster Strikes. Matt, I spent 9 years with the Navy, so I know firsthand what it's like to have a very strong defense. And I also know to have a good defense, you need to have a great offense. Be that as it may, we spend billions of dollars for the military, and we seem to be, based on what I'm hearing from you, ignoring the most obvious, and that's staying at home and fixing our grid.
I agree. You know, for the price of a single B-2 stealth bomber, they could fix this problem. I mean, it wouldn't fix every bad thing from happening from an extreme geomagnetic storm or from an EMP from a terrorist. But it would, for about $1 billion, we could implement this new technology. It's been developed and proven, but not implemented. It's a new vacuum tube technology that does a super fast switch on each of these transformers that would protect them from melting down, from frying in an extreme GMD or EMP event. And for another $1 billion, we could mandate a year's supply of backup fuel and EMP containers, EMP hardened containers on site at every nuclear power plant where we had critical backup components, critical cooling system pumps, critical, you know, power generation devices, whatever they feel, the engineers feel, is necessary to replace very quickly and rapidly something that's been damaged either by a solar storm or an EMP. Now, solar storms will tend to fry the grid on a massive scale, and EMP will fry the grid on a more local scale, but the EMP will do much more damage to the critical industrial digital control systems that keeps everything in our world running. So an EMP is like a much smaller circle of influence, but it actually screws up a lot more stuff. Now, there's a lot of falsehoods out there. It's not going to fry every electronic device in America like some people think. But the problem is it'll fry a lot of the critical stuff, the stuff that has digital microelectronics that's connected by long runs of cables, like Ethernet cables and cables to sensors. So basically everything that runs our infrastructure, that runs the cooling system and nuclear power plants, that runs our communication, that runs all of our industrial systems, all of those things, they basically in EMP simulated tests, they see about 100% failure of systems like that.
Did I miss anything with any of these presidential candidates and the president? Has anyone addressed this?
Well, they've addressed it, but here's the kicker. Like, Newt Gingrich talks about it, but he spouts things that are false. So on the one hand, he's doing it a service because he's saying this is a really big problem.
And it is.
That, you know, some guys could buy a small nuclear device, put it on, and buy a Scud missile on the black market, launch it off of a junk freighter, you know, out in international waters, and then sink the freighter, have it blow off over the East Coast, and instantly New York City's cooked, Washington, D.C. No, people are directly cooked, but the stock market crashes, the government is rendered helpless, and nuclear power plants, well, from an EMP, some will melt down and some won't, because the problem is, EMP, you'll have like instant failure in some places because the electronic controls will be cooked and the backup power generators and backup pumps will be cooked. Whereas, you know, it's kind of a crapshot. Like, some of them will survive, some of them won't. Nobody really knows until it happens what will happen. Now, solar storm won't cook all the stuff individually. The backup power will kick in. But as soon as they run out of gas, because the whole infrastructure is down, because there's no grid all over most of the country, once they run out of gas, then they start to melt. Then they start to snap, crackle, and pop, just like Fukushima. So you're looking at, like, similar but not exactly the same, but really bad scenarios either way. Now, Fanute does a really great service by saying, this is a really bad problem, we've got to address it. But then he goes and says things like all electronics across America will instantly stop. And it's like, wait a minute, Newt, you're running for president of the United States. You haven't read the EMP Commission's report, have you?
Because get
you're
it right.
Things that aren't right.
Yeah.
You know?
Get
so,
it.
So it's like, yes, it's a huge problem, and yes, it's solvable, and we can't prevent every bad thing from happening, but we can protect the grid from full-on collapse, and we can protect our power plants from meltdown. Now, I'm not to say, you know, nothing is perfect. If you had an EMP, something might still go snap, crackle, pop in spite of our best efforts, but right now, we're not putting out the best efforts. I mean, I have George Baker, Dr. George Baker, who's been key in the EMP in the military for decades, Dr. Peter Pry, similarly in the military, Dr. William Graham, who was President Reagan's science advisor, and John Kappenman, who wrote the Meditech report, Geomagnetic Storms and Their Impacts on the U.S. Power Grids. All four of these top scientist guys are 100% behind what I'm saying. And they've been urging me to write this 400 Chernobyls article. You can Google it if you want to know more and get the information out, because they say, Matt, you know, we've written all these scientific reports. Three of these guys are in the EMP Commission, and Congress has voted on it, but they're just not getting how serious it is. You know, in a five-minute briefing from someone, they're not getting it.
No, you're spot on. What are you more concerned about, an EMP pulse attack or something from the sun?
Oh, something from the sun, because something from the sun is absolutely guaranteed to happen. And every 11 years, the poles flip on our sun, and it goes through a solar maximum. And we're coming up on a solar maximum the end of this year, beginning of next. Scientists are saying from the preliminary heating up of the action on the sun, the activity that we've been seeing recently, they're really worried that we might have a solar maximum like the 1921 one, or even worse, the 1859 one. So they're saying, you know, we're basically statistically due, but it's a crapshot. I mean, until it happens, you don't know. But it's like guaranteed to happen. You keep rolling those dice, eventually you're going to get snake eyes.
Oh, there's no,
eventually
there's no
it's going to, you know, it's like if you don't do the right thing, it's just like New Orleans. They for 50 years, the engineers said, this is a disaster waiting to happen. It is going to happen. It's just a matter of not if, but when. And then sure enough, they didn't fix the levees, and it happened. And we're in the same boat, only it's the end of the world as we know it if we get a storm like 1921 or 1859 and we haven't put these fixes in place. It's like game over.
Oh, my gosh. Matt, you'll be on the show telling people if they have radios to hear us and power, well, if they have batteries, they might be able to still get us. That's right?
That's right. And, you know, in my book, if you want to learn more about strategies, then in my book, When Disaster Strikes, the last chapter is The Unthinkable, Surviving a Nuclear Catastrophe. It lays out the different strategies for the three different types of nuclear events. And the chapter before that, if you want to know more on the subject, is EMP and solar storms. And it lays out strategies, and it teaches you what you need to know, do, and have on hand to keep your family safe.
Sure. Emergency preparedness. We've been pushing storable food and radios for years now, Matt. Let's take some calls. Let's go to George in New York City, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, George. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Good morning, guys. I'm sorry, Mardi Gras is over, I think, if you're on the West Coast. But anyway, geodesic domes, I'm thinking of. Remember the Lord of the Rings, the Hobbits?
Yep.
They had these little geodesic domes, grass-covered, and now that's for individual survival and a little hydropower plant. I mean, a stream, if you're near a mountain, you could get fresh water and get a little hydropower, you know, just on a simple basis. But with the big cities and with these nuclear power plants, I'm thinking, or the grid, I'm thinking of how about a geodesic lead-covered dome?
Well, I'd say it's a lot easier to get out of town. I mean, you know, it could be tough in a fast situation, but essentially, when there is a meltdown, the longer you are downstream, it's cumulative. The damage, the pollution, and the radiation coming into your body.
You get it all. Yeah.
What's important is, one, is to avoid, you know, breathing it in and drinking it. So you need to protect your air system. But two, it's really to get out of the area. And then three, is to avoid eating contaminated food. And the further you go up the food chain, the worse it gets. So like in after Chernobyl, they could have saved a million people from dying an early terrible death and 3 million people from having horrible health problems all their life, at least a large percentage of them, if they had banned eating that food.
I don't think we'll ever know the real damage from Fukushima, Matt.
Well, Fukushima you probably won't know, but the epistemological study that the Soviet science people have done has indicated that there's been a million deaths
from Chernobyl.
From Chernobyl, and 3 million people with severely compromised health systems. So that's a lot of people, and that's from one Chernobyl. Now imagine 300 Chernobyls happening around the planet. There's 442 approximately nuclear reactors in the world, but not only that, each.
Now we've got 25% of them, don't we?
Well, we've got 104 in America. So you're right. One out of four in the world is in America. But then each reactor that's been going a long time, they have what's called a spent fuel pond. Like every year or two, these reactor cores are toast. They're no good anymore. They've cooled, you know, the radiation level is dropping. I mean, they're still highly radioactive, but they don't produce enough heat to effectively do the power generation. So they take them out and they swap them out for a brand new core. They take that old core and they have to keep cooling it for the next 3 to 5 years in a water-stored pond under 25 feet of water. So you have these spent reactor core ponds all over the place. Like at Fukushima, they had one. And if it weren't for heroic actions on a part of a bunch of guys that are probably going to die soon to keep water in those ponds, they would have boiled dry. In fact, they boiled down so far that some of the tips of the spent fuel rods were uncovered. And what happens when these things are uncovered is they start overheating when they lose this cooling water.
Didn't those ponds get inundated when the tsunami hit?
Well, they got inundated and they lost their cooling system. And see, depending on how recently they put a new reactor core in there, they will boil dry in 4 to 30 days. Like if they're really old cores and they haven't swapped out a reactor core recently, then it can take a whole month for a pond to boil dry. But in the case of Fukushima, they had just decommissioned one of the reactors. So its fuel pond, had a really hot core in there. It was very highly active radioactively and heat-wise, thermally. So it boiled dry in a few days. And if they hadn't replenished it, you would have had the equivalent of 10 Chernobyls burning at once, going into the atmosphere. So in Fukushima, more than 90% of the radiation went into the water and into the ocean. And in Chernobyl, 100% went into the atmosphere. Now, if that spent fuel pond had boiled dry, if those guys hadn't given their life to keep water in that pond, to submit themselves to excessive radiation to keep water in that pond, we would have had 10 Chernobyls burning at once in that fuel pond. And in the fuel ponds, they got a simple tilt-up building, concrete building with a corrugated steel roof around them. No 10-foot wall or 6-foot wall of concrete and steel in a reactor containment vessel. It's just a simple industrial building. So when it burns, there's nothing to hold it in. It just goes out into the sky.
And getting back to George from New York's question about building a huge geodesic dome, not going to happen if we're not even spending the money on backup transformers.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's so much cheaper just do preventative measures. I mean, a single cell bomber, what's that? That's like 1/300th of the TARP bailout. I mean, it's like, how come they have the money for the rich 1% on Wall Street, but we don't have the money to prevent the end of the world as we know it? I mean, somebody's got their head up you know where. I mean, their priorities are totally screwed up. I think it's just a matter that if Newt Gingrich running for the president, who thinks he's an expert on it, hasn't actually really read the report, then what about all the rest of these clowns in Congress? I mean, how much of this have they read? Or how much have they just, like, trusted that's not a problem? And part of the problem is they wrote the SHIELD Act, which is in Congress, and the SHIELD Act is putting the cost of doing this on the shoulders of industry.
I know of only four major outlets that have been talking about this. That would be you, William Forstgen,
yes,
WorldNet Daily, and our show.
Wow.
I know of no other entities that are talking about the possibility of the power grid going down.
Well, it's being being talked about, but people just say, "Oh, you're just a fearmonger, and you're just trying to scare us." And if it was a problem, then they would have done something about it. But I have these top scientists saying, "Matt, we've been trying for years to do something about it, and people just aren't listening."
You're warning people on a legitimate concern, and if that's fearmongering, so be it.
Yeah, I mean, was it fearmongering when the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers said the levees around New Orleans are inadequate, and that when there's a direct hit of a hurricane, they will fail? Well, it's the same kind of fear-mongering saying that our grid is not adequately protected from a naturally recurring extreme solar storms that hit on the average of 75 to 100 years, on the average. I mean, they could be two of them 5 years apart. The last one was 90 years ago. The one before that was only 60 years before that. Do the math, that's an 80-year average, and it's been 90 years since the last one, so I think we're overdue. You know, and so it's not fear-mongering. It's just saying, hey, we got to fix this or it's going to fix us. And, you know, it just makes sense. We got to do something. It's just not that expensive and not that tough to do it. If we could defeat Hitler, and this is a much bigger threat than Hitler, and this is a self-made threat. I mean, no one knew when they designed these nuclear reactors that this was something that might happen, but we know that now.
Let's go to Pocatello, Idaho. Paul, take it away. Thanks for calling, Paul.
Good evening.
Hi.
I had a comment on those transformers and then a question.
Okay.
They're so difficult to deal with because the interior is completely hand-built out of hardwood, dowel dovetailed together, special wood, all custom-built, hand-wound. It's literally, those huge transformers have a lattice work inside that is all hand-built, and it's an art. It's
right.
Really an art.
It is an art.
And that's why there's only a couple companies that I'm aware of in the U.S. that even attempt to rebuild them. One's here. We had a big application here for them at one time. But, yeah, if anything went down, you'd never get any rebuilt that needed to be rebuilt here. Question I had real quick.
Yeah.
I read in a couple places that utilities and generation companies are considering if it's possible to start switching off the grid if they really think they've got a big one coming in, and they might be able to coordinate taking a lot of these big transformers offline. Can you comment on that if you've heard anything?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they have the satellites watching the sun. And, you know, a big CME, they vary in speed. And the fast ones can get here in like 10 to 12 hours. The slow ones can take 5 days. And so they're watching the sun, but here's the thing. To shut down the grid across America, you're talking like incredibly hard to start, super expensive. Who's going to make that decision to do that? And if there's a false start, it's something they're discussing doing, but it's so much cheaper. I mean, one shutdown of the grid will cost way more than putting this stuff in there to protect the grid in the first place.
The only thing you could hope for, Matt, is that your part of the country is not facing the sun when it happens.
Well, that's correct. But, you know, in the 1921 storm, it was 48 hours long. So
as you turned, it still hit you. That's
yeah.
Right.
And in the 1859 one, there was two massive CMEs. The first one lasted 2 days.
Bang. Bang.
And then there was one that hit again, and it lasted 5 days. So you had a 7-day event. So, in 2003, there was a massive storm that was probably 1/50th the size of the 21 storm, but it did happen to hit pretty heavy in South Africa.
Well, it makes you wonder, Matt, what the Mayans really knew. Matt Stein, when technology fails, just a matter of when, folks, not if. And I'll be back in a moment with Dr. Joe Dispenza on Coast to Coast AM. Matt, thank you for the great hour. We'll be back.